You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Wednesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Got a busy hour here. We'll check in with Jeff Passan, covers baseball for the mothership. Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian, will stop by. And he talks about life after the Olympics, sort of a post-Olympics depression that he went through. Powerful documentary that's coming out. We'll talk to Rudy Gobert, the Utah Jazz Center. He'll join us coming up a little bit later on as well. Your phone calls are welcome, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. We touched on the Dodgers-Astros series. I'll ask Jeff Passan about that. Any disciplinary action with the commissioner and that series. Nobody got hit, but there was intent there by Joe Kelly. So that'll be coming up. McLovin, poll question?
Hour one was, will Aaron Rodgers be a Packers starter in 2021? 56% said yes. I just switched it up to, if you were an opposing pitcher, would you risk throwing at the Astros for hour two?
Okay, let's bring in Jeff Passan, the baseball insider for the mothership. I know you're busy. We appreciate you carving out a little time here. Let me start with what happened in Houston last night with Joe Kelly. Nobody got hit, but there was certainly intent there. Where does Major League Baseball stand on the retaliation with the Houston Astros?
Dan, intent is a really funny thing because, I want to very clearly say I do think he probably was throwing at Alex Bregman. But Brandon McCarthy, who I have a lot of respect for and who was a major league pitcher for a long time, said to me on Twitter, how do you know? And his point was Joe Kelly is one of the wildest pitchers in baseball. Joe Kelly had absolutely no control of his pitches last night. Joe Kelly's the guy who during quarantine broke a window at his house trying to throw a changeup. Like, I don't know if you saw that video, but his wife posted a video on Instagram.
Do you think he did it on purpose just to give the appearance that he's wild? So when he faced the Houston Astros, then he would have a good excuse.
It would be the most spectacular long con of all time, and I absolutely hope that that is true. So let's assume that there was intent there. Right. Like you said, didn't hit the guy, didn't get thrown out of the game by an umpire. I think if there's going to be discipline for anything, Dan, and I haven't gotten this answer yet talking with people who are in charge of this sort of thing, but I think if there's going to be discipline for anything, it would be for the benches clearing. It pretty explicitly states in Major League Baseball's 113-page protocol, do not mess around when it comes to brawls. Do not get off the bench. Do not congregate in large groups. There was no social distancing being enforced when these teams got off the benches and were sort of mingling and doing the little baseball dance there. So I don't think there are going to be any suspensions. I've certainly been wrong on this thing before, but I just don't foresee at this point MLB coming down with a hammer, even if Joe Kelly was throwing at Alex Bregman.
I think the reaction by Joe Kelly to Correa when he struck him out and what he said to him leads me to believe.
It was so stupid.
But that's why it leads me to believe that there was intent there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, and I understand the intent. He was with the Red Sox who lost to the Astros in 2017. Now he's trying to fit in with this year's Dodgers saying, I'm going to go out there and I'll buzz the tower with a couple of these guys. And I certainly understand it, but I don't know what happens tonight when these two teams meet. I'm guessing both sides, both managers, both pitchers, no nonsense, I'm running you. And you can't afford to have one of your starting pitchers, especially if you're the Astros. They've already lost Garrett Cole, and they lost Justin Verlander, and the Dodgers can't afford to have a pitcher suspended as well. So I don't know where we're headed tonight, but I'm tuning in.
I hope it's to a reasonable place where 5-ounce projectiles aren't thrown 100 miles per hour behind someone's head. Like, I hope, every year when baseball starts, I sit there thinking maybe this is the year where baseball players aren't going to act like Neanderthals and try and enact frontier justice via deadly like objects. That's what a baseball is. And if that fastball had hit Alex Bregman in the head, it can cause severe and permanent damage. And I just wish at some point baseball players would agree among themselves, let's not try to hurt one another. Even if you have been aggrieved in the past, let's not try to do something that could cause lifelong damage. It boggles my mind that we are in 2020 and guys are stilling at one another. And I understand that's how they've policed the game for the entirety of it. But still, you know, the game's evolved, Dan, in so many other ways. Why can't it evolve in this one?
Yeah, but you can't throw at somebody's head. I don't like that you're able to throw that baseball and the pitchers don't have to bat because the DH. And if you pitch in the American League, I can throw at you and I'm not going to get hurt. My concern would be, if I'm the Dodgers, I'm Dave Roberts, is, guys, we sent a message yesterday. We beat them. We buzzed the tower a couple of times. I don't want any of my guys. I don't want Cody Bellinger going down. I don't want somebody throwing at our guys, because that's the surprising part. If you're an Astros pitcher, are you allowed to then start going at the opposition? Because you have to protect your own players.
It's really interesting, Dan. I'm glad you brought up the Astros pitching earlier, because they have so many guys on the injured list now in their bullpen. I believe their bullpen has 9 rookies in it at this moment. And you know, one of those guys, just because of baseball code and the way that the sport is thinking to himself, well, I have to go and show my teammates that I am willing to stand up for them and protect them. And I hope that cooler heads prevail here and that something like that doesn't happen. But, you know, everything is set up for another just weird and ugly night. And I would like to believe that if there is a suspension today, that's going to be the sort of thing that prevents that from happening. Yeah. Almost like Joe Kelly or other players getting off the bench are going to be suspended as a preemptive measure. But do you really want to open that Pandora's box where you suspend someone so something doesn't get exacerbated? I don't know if you're Major League Baseball, if you could or should do that.
He's Jeff Passan. He covers baseball for ESPN. I don't know if there's a manager has more pressure on them this year than Dave Roberts. Given the fact it's a 60-game sprint, if they don't make the World Series, finish that sentence.
If they don't make the World Series, they will be extremely disappointed, but understanding that when you are in a playoff format where you can lose in the first round by losing 2 games in a sport where an inferior team beats a superior team 2 games in a row all the time and 2 out of 3 all the time, I don't know if that is a fireable offense.
Do you think he has the most pressure on him? Is that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that's absolutely, because let's remember what happened last October. I mean, if Dave Roberts had been let go after that NLDS game against the Washington Nationals, I don't think it would have surprised anyone. And I think you certainly could have made the argument for it. And I remember sitting there writing that column after Game 5, just the number of things that he did that were questionable and the decision-making there was just bad. But Dave Roberts, like everybody else who makes mistakes, has a chance to redeem himself this year. And he is working with the most talented team in baseball, Dan. Like, that's the thing. He's got so much at his disposal there. They have a finite amount of years with Cody Bellinger there and with Corey Seager there. You know, Mookie Betts is going to be around for a while, and they have a great core. But every year you don't win a championship, if you're the Dodgers, you're not maximizing what you can have, which is something that's dynastic. That's how good this core of talent is there. They can be a dynasty.
Let me get to the Marlins here, and I'm still trying to figure this out, of baseball having a short-term and a long-term goal here, that they had to look at Sunday and say short-term or long-term. Long-term would have been, let's protect both teams, and, you know, if you have an outbreak, there's 4. And the Phillies didn't get to vote on this either. You know, so they're facing them. They have no say in whether or not the Marlins take the field that day. And then here we are, the Marlins aren't going to be playing baseball till next Monday. What is there's so many questions here. They're not going to play 60 games.
No. I don't think, if you look at their schedule right now, Dan, they can make up the games that they're missing against the Washington Nationals. You know, there's an off day in August. I think there's an off day in August or September, and they can, you know, pull a doubleheader here or there. But against the Orioles, there's just nowhere that they can make up those four games. So I think maximum right now, you know, let's say they go to Baltimore for one off day, but are you really going to do that with two teams that in all likelihood are going to be either in last place or really low in the standings and not making the playoffs? No, I don't think they're going to go out of their way to try and get as close to a 60-game season as they can.
Yeah, but what do you do as far as winning percentage if there's other teams that don't they don't play 60 games?
Dan, we're in 2020. Are you trying to apply logic to the world right now? Because if so, where the hell have you been for the last 4 months?
I apologize. I sometimes infuse logic into this program, and I apologize there, Jeff. When do the Marlins play again?
I don't know if it's Tuesday. I mean, right now they have an off day scheduled for Monday. Clearly all their games are postponed through then. Yeah. But at this point, the questions for them are, how do they travel? How do they travel safely? Where do the players who are COVID positive go? Do they stay in Philadelphia, or are they able to take a charter or a bus back to Miami? I don't even know at this point what the plan is there. They're exploring all their options. And beyond that, can they field a representative team? Are they going to be able to get players from their alternate site in Jupiter, Florida? Are they going to claim, you know, they've claimed three guys off waivers already. Are they going to go waiver hunting some more? Like, there are a lot of balls in the air right now. And I wouldn't say that playing Tuesday is by any means a guarantee for the Marlins.
It's unbelievable. It just, and I, if I'm a team.
You know, though, here's the thing, though, Dan. What's the alternative?
I know. But I don't want to go to Miami. If I'm a team, I don't want to go to Miami. I do not want to go to Miami. And then
do you not want to go to Miami because of what's going on in Miami, or because of what's gone on with the Marlins, or both?
Both. Yeah. And then you have Bob Nightingale from USA Today saying that, you know, some of the Marlins went out on the town when they were in Atlanta, I believe.
I don't know how true that is.
Oh, really?
I mean, I've heard that rumor. There are all kinds of rumors that come out when something like this happens. And I don't know if we're ever going to fully know ground zero of that outbreak. I just don't.
Magic City for wings, then, Jeff, then I think that we have a story.
Dan, if they went to Magic City for wings, then it was well worth it. Because L. Duncan, my friend on SportsCenter, has been talking up Atlanta chicken wings for the last 24 hours with me, trying to argue that they are better than the wings at the Peanut here in Kansas City. And we are going to have a wing off at some point. She wants me to come down to Atlanta to eat the wings. Wow. That's how much she loves the wings.
Wow. I know you're busy. Thank you for making some time for us, as always, Jeff.
I always make time for you, my friend. Thanks for having me.
That's Jeff Passan. He covers baseball for ESPN. Yeah, I've had the wings in Atlanta. Taco Max, I think, was a place that we used to go to that had all kinds of beers, and they'd have wings. It's National Chicken Wing Day today. Yeah. I don't know.
Let's get wings.
Do you have a place that you've ever been where you said, I got to go back there, where you had chicken wings? You're like, that.
I had them in Buffalo at the Anchor Bar, and they were really good. And it's like 25 years ago I had them there. And, you know, that's why people go, why do they call them Buffalo wings? And because they originated in Buffalo, and they were really good. I've had some where you go, boy, that's different. Yes, he
might be one of the best contributions from Buffalo. I mean, talk about a game changer.
Yeah, but I don't know if Buffalo gets enough credit for Buffalo wings.
I don't think they do.
Yeah,
they should get more credit.
Yeah, because I don't know if everybody understands that.
Is that one of the largest culinary sort of contributions?
Accomplishments?
Absolutely. It's Buffalo wings. What else is on that?
French scale? Fries. You got the whole country, and we eat them like crazy.
What about Kansas City to barbecue? It's a nice contribution.
Don't get started there, because then Memphis is going to join
well,
in.
I know. Buffalo is on its own. Like, Buffalo created it.
Right.
Who else created something?
And it's like the like they created it so much.
Hold on, hold on. Yes, McLovin.
I think the city of Philadelphia created a couple of things. Philly cheesesteaks and Philly cream cheese. I don't know.
And bad sports fans.
Hey. Passionate is the word that you
passionate. But they are that.
But I don't even know if Philadelphia cream cheese, did they invent cream cheese? Probably not, right?
I have no idea. But I'll give you cheesesteaks there. Who created the hoagie?
Oh, remember we talked about that? That was on the docks of Philly. They made, it's called Hog Island. Outside
so they're hoagies.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so you got cheesesteaks and hoagies.
But isn't a hoagie the same as a sub in New England? Isn't that what they call it?
Or New York?
A grinder.
Grinder. A hero.
I'm seeing cream cheese, by the way, invented in New York.
So,
yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, that makes sense with the bagels and cream cheese. Mm. All right, we're going to take a break. Get to phone calls coming up. Michael Phelps will join us. Got a powerful documentary that's coming out tonight at 9 Eastern. And I'll talk to him about the post-Olympic depression. Not just, you know, him, but there are other Olympians in there. Bodie Miller is in there. There's Apollo Ohno is in there. Yes, Tom.
Imagine putting your whole life into something and just in a matter of minutes, sometimes in certain events, seconds, that determines the success of everything that you and your family put into everything you've done.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
We'll take a break. Michael Phelps joins us next here on The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Dan Patrick Show brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Be prepared for whatever comes your way in the all-new GT four-door coupe. Because life is a race, visit your local dealership for a test drive today. If you missed any of our interviews this week or any week from the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, go to the danpatrick.com site. You can watch and listen from inside the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, Mercedes-AMG Driving Performance. HBO Sports presents The Weight of Gold, a revealing documentary exploring the mental health challenges Olympic athletes often face in very personal detail. It debuts tonight at 9 Eastern and Pacific. The film features Michael Phelps, who's also the narrator and executive producer. Lolo Jones, Jeremy Bloom is in there. Bodie Miller, Apollo Ohno is also in there. Sean White is in there. It seeks to inspire the discussion of mental health, encourage help-seeking behavior, and highlight the need for readily available help and support. And Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian of all time, joins us on the program. I'll get to the documentary in a moment, but Michael, have you ever had a job that wasn't swimming related?
I don't think so. I was laughing when you guys were talking about that. No, I don't think I really have done anything but swim or I guess talk.
But not even a lifeguard?
No.
Nope. Paperboy, mow yards, deliver pizzas?
Nope.
You know what you should do? You should do a show where you do some of these jobs for the first time, like chef, mow somebody's grass, postman.
I mean, I
for
guess
a day.
I did mow grass as a kid, and I do cook every day, so I guess those are kind of...
Okay, all right.
Maybe.
What did you put
I'm exploring my options.
What did you put on your taxes for your profession?
My financial advisor filled that up.
But were you so you didn't even do that? So, do you think he put down swimmer,
athlete? Maybe.
Oh, athlete.
Yeah.
All right. This is a powerful documentary, and I know you've been at the forefront of talking about depression, and we don't see this, and I'm glad you brought it to the forefront. You spend all your life to do something, and it could be for 2 minutes. It could be for one race. It could be for just a moment there, and then all of a sudden you have to get on with your life after that. But what has your life been prior to that, other than being just that athlete, was what I took out of it. When did you realize, you know, like kind of who am I now? Because you weren't a swimmer. You'd become Michael Phelps, you know, husband, father. That's a big, big realization.
I guess like the biggest thing was, you know, really learning to love who I saw in the mirror. You know, I mean, for, you know, as you heard in the documentary, like I truly thought of myself and felt like I was just a swimmer and not a human being and not a person. And that was, you know, I guess a lot because I felt like I couldn't share some of the things that I had carried throughout my career, because in the sports world, like, we can't show a weakness. And if we show a weakness, then we're giving something away to our competitors. And that's something that you obviously try to want to stay away from. And, you know, it took me a long time to realize that there are other ways to go about this. And, you know, I think after competing in my fifth Olympics in Rio and seeing that there were other athletes that were going through similar things, I was startled, shocked, surprised, but also scared. And felt like, I needed to step up and try and talk about this, and very thankful to have the other athletes step up and show their vulnerability and share the stories that they have as well.
But you get to that point when you reveal something really personal. And I had gone through something a year ago where I mentioned on the show that I battled depression. And, you know, people think you have everything. Like, what are you depressed about? And then you have to explain to people, depression doesn't know what you've accomplished. It just sort of taps you on the shoulder. But you had you had to have that moment where you go, I'm going public with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was just like, it was almost just annoying just to kind of have it like keep coming up and feeling like I couldn't deal with it. And I finally got to the point where I was like, you know what, this is who I am, and this makes me. So, you know, I think, you know, once I realized that depression or anxiety is going to be a part of my life forever, I decided to start learning more about it. And that's where, you know, I felt comfortable and safe opening up and talking about my struggles. And, you know, I still talk about them today. I'm still going through them today. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are going through similar things during this pandemic as well.
You and Kevin Love have really, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes to this. Ron Artest, going back when he was playing for the Lakers, just to be able to share that so people understand anybody can go through this. It's the question is somebody listening to you? And you have somebody to talk to. I don't know, you probably didn't share this when you were an Olympian with anybody, did you?
No, I mean, I think the first time I really opened was probably, well, I guess it was right before 16. 2014, I opened up in a Sports Illustrated interview with Tim Layden, and whatever question he asked, it triggered something and made me feel safe to open up. And ever since that, I haven't looked back. And truly, I've been able to find that communicating has been the single-handed thing that truly has saved my life. I feel like I learned it later in life than I would have liked to, but at least I learned it. So, you know, communicating for me is something that I try to do more of every single day, because that's the way that I can learn and grow and try to become a better person.
How dark did it get for you?
I mean, a few times it's been pretty dark where, you know, you almost don't want to see, you know, the next day. But, you know, I will say that I think through the journey that I've been through so far, I have been able to experience more during these last 4 to 6 months than I ever could imagine. You know, I feel like going through this pandemic that we're in, where we don't, you know, I guess we have so many uncertainties. I truly feel like I've been able to have challenges placed almost like strategically through this for me to go through. And, you know, I feel like my wife and I have really been able to, become closer and learn more about, I guess each other. And I think just the communicating that we've had through this process has been, obviously very challenging, but, life-changing and something I'm thankful for.
What role do your children play in this?
Oh my gosh, my children, no matter what they do, will automatically bring a pure smile, the biggest smile, joy to my face. They're up right now. I can hear them in the background going crazy. And you know, truly it's nothing but just absolutely happiness. I mean, it's sometimes it's frustrating when they press your buttons. My oldest knows how to press mine very well.
Give me an example.
You know, like I guess it's like, I remember myself as a kid growing up asking why, I, you know, like you ask a question and I don't know the answer to it. So I say, I don't know the answer to it. And he says, why? And you're like, I don't know. I have no idea why. Like one day you'll understand. But you know, I think it's just, it's so awesome to see and to hear the things that they say. I mean, it surprises me every single day.
You got to remove the word why. As a parent, I would remove the word why from my kids' vocabulary. And you have three. I have four, but they're grown. And there'd be times I would just say, go ask your mom. Like, I didn't know what the answer was. I just say, go ask your mom. And, you know, and that they'd go ask her. And she said, go ask your dad. Like, it was like a game of tennis, you know, with that word back and forth.
Yeah, it's so good.
We're talking to Michael Phelps. The documentary is Weight of Gold. It's tonight at 9 Eastern on HBO, 9 Eastern and Pacific. What would you change about the Olympic system that could help athletes, well, people become a person in everyday life? Is there something that would stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you hear us talk a lot in the film about it's okay to not be okay. You know, I think that's something that we can all learn and really take to heart. And also, you know, I mean, if you're having a hard time, talk about it. You know, like I truly was able to see firsthand in Rio how many other athletes were struggling from this. And you know, 80% of people, I would say, coming out of an Olympics will go through some kind of depression. And you know, in the States, it's one out of every five go through some kind of mental health struggle. So, it's wild. It's crazy. I mean,
how do you feel that competitive void?
I'm on the golf course a lot, so
okay. All right.
I'm not very good, but I'm still working out. So I'm still challenging myself that way. I work out 6 or 7 days a week still, and trying to get that going. But yeah, I think golf is something that you know, as athletes take on, it's something that is challenging to perfect. So I've had the chance to play with some pretty amazing people out there and learn a lot. So hopefully I can improve my game, but I don't know.
And I hear you lose money when you play too.
Yeah, I have a couple times. Yeah.
Now, do you pay cash to the president, Barack Obama, or is it a check, a medal, like a bronze or something?
He was good. He had good hands, man. Oh my gosh. He did not miss a single putt out there. I remember exactly what I lose to each person. So I hope to have the chance to win that back at some point in my life. Mm. So if they're listening, I remember it, and I'm coming back for it.
What's the day after the Olympics like?
For me, it was going home. It's always challenging being on the road for 2 to 3 months. So for me, I want to get out of there. And I remember in Rio, I went right to the hotel room where my wife and son were and spent time with them.
But also you have all of this build up and all these races, and everybody cares about these sports that they don't care about at any other time other than the Olympics. They're all in the pressure, the United States. You know, are you going to have, you know, how many gold medals? Like, there's a lot going on. And then all of a sudden it's over. And then you go, okay, now what?
Now what? Yeah, you basically twiddle your thumbs and either you're going to start back for another 4 years or you're going to start the next chapter of your life. And that's either finding a job or it's hoping to take a can of pull it off of what you've done in your career. And you know, for me, I'll say fortunate. I've been extremely lucky to have a decent career where, you know, I can take that and help me into the next transition. And
don't do fake humility. That's, you're better than that.
Well, I mean, looking back, I would have liked another, you know, had another world record or so, but you know, I had a great career. I did. And it was fun. But yeah.
What race bothers you? Because guys with your success, they always talk about the ones that got away. They don't always talk about the ones that they won.
400 IM from 2012, 200 fly from 2012. I'd like to have 100 or 200 back redo again and maybe give that world record a chance. I mean, there are a handful of races I would definitely do again.
Did you ever have a perfect race?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the 400 IM from 2008, the 200 free from 08 was pretty good. Yeah, other than that, I can always pick something to to pick from a race.
So the Olympics are, you know, pushed back to 2021, and you and Paulie, my producer, have had an ongoing bet about. Paulie thinks you're coming back to swim.
Looking good, Mike.
Yep. He looks like he's in shape, Paulie, right?
Clean
will 2021 happen?
I don't know. If it does, will you be there in swimming trunks?
Maybe in the hotel pool.
If you could compete today, could you compete today with the top swimmers in the world?
At this very minute?
Yeah.
Probably not. No.
How about a month? How about 6 months?
No.
Oh, okay. So this is.
I mean, like, honestly, like if I really wanted to do it in a perfect way, I would need minimal 18 to 24 months. It's hard to, like, swimming, you take one day, it takes 2 days to get back. So, like, I've been swimming a little bit here and there now, but I don't feel like I know how to swim when I jump in the pool. Like, I feel like I'm just learning again. So, I've lost a lot of feel for the water.
Oh, man.
If I wanted to, yeah, I feel like I could in 18 to 24 months, but I don't think it's going to happen.
When's the last time you jumped in the pool, even with your kid? Like, has somebody challenged you? Anytime you jump in the pool, do you have people say, come on, let me swim against you?
From time to time, you'll have somebody who will push off, like as I'm doing a flip turn and try to race you for a 25. So you end up just taking three or four strokes and pulling away, or I hammer a turn and do four or five kickouts to make sure that they know that I'm not playing around. Yeah, but it's all the time. I mean, it's nonstop. My kids are in the pool every single day. So they've got a mean streamline right now, and Boomer's got some nice freestyle going.
That's great. Hey, it's great to talk to you. And I know it sounds strange to say this, Michael, but you know what? We may look back on what you've done with this more than what you did in a pool.
And I hope so. I mean, I think, you know, this is, in my opinion, bigger than anything I've ever done in the pool, bigger than winning a gold medal. And honestly, you know, I know how hard it is to go through something like this. And I've dealt with it for a long time, and I still go through it. So, you know, the people who are out there, you know, struggling, you're not alone. You know, you got somebody sitting in Arizona pretty much every day that has some kind of struggle. So, you know, keep your head up and one step after another and ask for help. You know, it's something that truly did save my life. And hopefully we can really start to lower the suicide numbers.
The Weight of Gold, it's a revealing documentary. It's powerful. And it's not just Michael talking about this. Jeremy Bloom, Lolo Jones is in there. Gracie Gold, Bodie Miller, Apollo Ono is in there. And Michael is the executive producer, the narrator, and it seeks to inspire discussion of mental health and encourage help-seeking behavior. And that's really what Michael's getting to. Boy, it's great when you have somebody who will just sit and listen to you, because there are times when you feel like nobody understands exactly what you're going through. So, Michael, it's great to talk to you again. Swimming starts in a year and 4 days in the Olympics, Paulie?
Just throwing it out there. I saw the schedule.
Okay. I think Michael's retired. I do. Would you swim Paulie, my producer?
Would it be a swimming race?
It would. Well, what constitutes a race? This isn't a Katie Ledecky. I'm going to beat you by, you know, an entire lap or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we could set something up. It could be interesting.
How about floaties?
I could deck you out with some great MP gear.
Paulie would wear that.
I would wear that. Michael, have you ever raced like a 12-meter medley? Because that's kind of my max.
I don't know if I would take a breath. I think I would just shoot to the other side of the pool.
How long can you go without taking a breath?
Well, I'll answer the question, but I have to say I don't do it very often because it's not safe. But when I do it, it's because I've been practicing. I can probably go 100 meters underwater, up and back in a 50-meter pool. But that's just... Honestly, again, we've spent a lot of time in the water, and I'm probably more comfortable in that pool or in water than I am on land.
Paulie, you want to wear nose plugs?
Does MP make nose plugs, Mike? I get a little in my nasal.
I don't think Phelps has a nose plug, but I mean, we could probably find one for you.
We'll get the synchronized swimmers. They have those little.
There you go. What stroke would you go with, though?
Yeah, what would you go with, Paulie?
I don't have any. I would have to watch some tape. I would probably do backstroke because then I could actually breathe.
Do we have odds on this?
Oh, I don't think Vegas is going to touch this, Michael. I don't think Vegas will. Can we bound your legs, your feet, and have you swim? Can we put cement shoes on you,
a suit of armor.
Yes, a
that
suit
might
of
be
armor.
A good handicap there, yeah.
Hey, great to talk to you. Good luck with the documentary, and happy for you with the kids as well. Thank you, Michael.
Cheers, buddy, Jetson.
That's Michael Phelps. He's not coming back, Paulie. He is not coming back. You're going to lose your bet there. The documentary is Weight of Gold. It's tonight at 9 Eastern and Pacific.
Well, just to say, he said, I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh.
I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just to be with Paulie here. I don't believe it's going to happen either, but Michael Phelps said, I don't think it's going to happen.
Phelps undecided about 2021? Question mark?
You heard it here first.
And probably no other place after this either. Every time he comes on, Paulie's like, come on, you got to ask him. He's coming back. And I go, Paulie, he's not coming back. You were going to lose a bet.
I was so sure of it.
He's got three little ones. He's got a 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and a 10-month-old.
Who would love to see their dad whip ass out in Japan.
Take a break here. Back after this on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. Go to rockauto.com, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's car or truck will ever need, rockauto.com. Family business founded by automotive engineers in 1999, two goals in mind. First, giving you direct access to all the parts information hidden in those computers and catalogs behind the parts store counter. And second, making sure those parts are affordable. They offer reliably low prices. RockAuto.com, you choose the part brands, prices, features you want anytime 24/7. RockAuto.com even has some of the parts you've been told dealer only no longer available. And they're delivered right to your home or office. You don't waste time and money hunting for the parts, phoning, driving, waiting in lines. Go to rockauto.com today. Make sure you tell them that we sent you all the parts your car or truck will ever need at rockauto.com. Let's see. Ray in Texas joins us. Hi, Ray.
Hey, GP, 510, 150. Thank you. The Joe Kelly thing was definitely dangerous, reckless, but guess what? It was also very entertaining.
Oh,
and it's going to make people watch, you know? I mean, with the fake yawning and the faces he was making, definitely going to make people watch tonight.
Well, I'd be watching anyway, because there was just tension there, but thank you, Ray. And I had a baseball executive who said that he didn't think the Dodgers were going to take matters into their own hands, because you don't want to run the risk of getting one of your players hit or you have one of your pitchers getting suspended. It's a 60-game sprint here. But we saw that last night with Joe Kelly. And it's got to be frustrating if you're a Dodger fan for a couple of reasons. You lost the World Series. I can go back to that Game 5 where it felt like they knew what Kershaw was throwing, so they cheated. And then what is the penalty? The penalty is you get embarrassed. You get to keep all your money. You get to keep your trophy. You get to keep your ring. And the franchise gets fined $5 million. Now, granted, there's collateral damage with your GM and your manager, but that doesn't affect Jose Altuve or Alex Bregman. The commissioner could have done something about this, and he didn't. Because remember, he said that's just a piece of metal, the World Series trophy, just a piece of metal. You know, the players got nothing here. Coach GM fired. An owner who's clueless still didn't think that, somehow this helped them win a World Series, but it did. But I'm curious what happens tonight. And if you're going to have warnings there, what happens? I'd probably just, let's establish that. But you can't say to the Astros and Dusty Baker, hey, I'm going to give you guys a warning because you came onto the field. The warning should have started before that, but Joe Kelly didn't hit anybody. Can I suspend you for intent? Yeah, Paul.
Hitting is old school, but it wouldn't have been so much more snarky and funny if the entire Dodgers dugout started banging the wall and banging the trash cans when the Astros pitcher went into his stretch.
Yeah.
And everyone in the whole place would start laughing, even though there's no one, you know, the whole both sides.
I don't think the Dodgers are there yet where you can just sort of laugh this off, because they weren't going to be facing the Astros. Due to the pandemic, they changed the scheduling and made it more geographically friendly for these teams, and that's why they're playing the Astros. Yeah, McLevin.
The poll is, if you were an opposing pitcher, would you throw out the Astros? 69% say yes.
I would want to, but I also have to factor in a couple of things. What does it really accomplish here? And what is the bigger picture? If you're the Dodgers, you can't be worried about these little battles. You got to win a war, and you have to win the World Series. You want to make sure that you're in the best position to do that. And the last thing you would want to happen is somebody plunk Mookie Betts and, you know, break a bone. Or something happens to Cody Bellinger. Like, you got to understand why you want to do something in the moment. You got to be smart and be above it the best you can, because the best retaliation is to win, to beat the Astros. But it'd be difficult, because I'd be first in line if they said, hey, who's going to throw at the Astros? I'd be like, I'll do it. And if you do it, okay. Understand that it could come back and haunt you, because those Astros pitchers are eventually going to start throwing at the opposition, because their hitters are going to say, are you guys going to protect us? And that'd be my big concern with all of this. But looking forward to the game tonight. Rudy Gobert is going to join us coming up final hour. When I saw the rundown, I went, wait, Todd's got Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz joining us. And we have been asking since he tested positive. But the timing is pretty good, because basketball starts tomorrow and Rudy Gobert will join us. He got it all started. I wonder, and I'm sure he didn't understand the magnitude of it in the moment, but when did he understand the magnitude? And I guess he and Donovan Mitchell are playing nice with one another and feels like this is, you know, going to go off smoothly for the NBA. Reggie Miller, I believe, joins us on the show tomorrow. This is going to be Rudy Gobert's legacy. Even though he's been an all-star, defensive player of the year. The Rockets, by the way, lost Eric Gordon for 2 weeks. He rolled his ankle. That's a high ankle sprain, and that hurt me just watching it. Final hour coming up. More phone calls. 877-3DP-SHOW. And Tyler, the moderator's video, is coming up next.